Good evening. It is Wednesday night. It is 7 o'clock. And we are in the midst of an exploration. And that exploration is Volume 5 of the Secret Talk series by E.J. Gold called Work of Groups. And this is our extra 10th week of the investigation. And we're going to open up in Chapter 24, which means there's a couple of very, very short chapters that we're not going to cover in this venue, but I strongly suggest you read every page. It's well worth it. But before we get started with our Chapter 24, we would like, I think Marvette is going to be telling us a little bit about the coming weekend.
Oh boy. We have an announcement.
You're up, Marvette.
I'm supposed to announce there's a workshop?
Yeah.
Pick up the phone.
You were doing it.
No, pick up the phone.
You're the one.
You're the one that knows all about it. Go ahead.
Oh, well, we have a big workshop this weekend starting on Saturday. What is that, the 27th of May?
Yes.
And then Sunday and Monday through the 29th. Usually they end midday Monday, noon. I think there is a page on IVHHB which you can register and come online. If you haven't notified us that you're coming in person, which, I don't know, maybe you want to make last-minute arrangements, but you're certainly welcome to come online. If you've followed EJ's programs in the morning, you know that he's working with raising money for an alternative health care center. And he's been working with making products on Cafe Press to help do that. And I think that he is going to be delving into that over the workshop. And he has been talking a lot about that this reality is a simulation. And so we are here to unmask the sim. And in doing so, we can unmask ourselves, getting down to the bottom of things. That was nothing he said. That was my addition. So it might not be bottom. It could be top or inside out or I don't know. Quantum physics can be funny. So don't take the direction seriously. So hope to see you all there. I'm going to hand it back over.
And where is the blog? Where is the blog if they want to find out more about the cafe?
Oh, okay. Yes. EJ did publish a blog today. And it is on gorbagsworld.com. That's his blog site. And there's you see on the right column all the different titles in descending order. So the top title would be today's, if it doesn't pop up in your view when you open it up. Okay.
Thanks for getting
you.
This going. And the other thing that we do before we begin the present day class is we take a look at the elements of groupness that were recorded by our scribe during the last week, and that would be week 9. And Pat, are you able to read that for us?
Yes.
Thank you. That's a very interesting handwriting. But
it's very, very, very clear. It's
I used to do graphology.
That is not my handwriting.
Yeah.
It's a great effort to make it.
Whose handwriting is it? Not yours.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wednesday, 5/17/17, week number 9. 1. Functions of a group. 1. When in a group, declaring something you find hard to believe will break through the disbelief. Example given. After EJ talked on angelic nature, he asked those present to say they were angelic. He was leaving the room and met their looks with the revelation that they were. 2, operations of a group. 1, the practice of group work can carry over to working with other groups. 2, in a group, individuals may simultaneously ponder the same questions. 3, as culinary critics looking for the proper meal, we find it as a group.
That was reaching.
That was quite there.
Yeah.
It was there. There.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing about groups that came to me during the last week was another element of a group is persistence. Persisting together as a group creates a fluidity of working together. Like you can depend on each other, like I can depend on everybody in this room in regards to what they do.
That's constancy.
Constancy, very nice, better word.
Yes.
So constancy, like even though, as odd as it is, sometimes I'll just simply blurt out, what about that, Silverdale? And he catches his breath and picks up his book from the floor, and then he proceeds. Okay?
Right there.
And there's something about the willingness of constancy, mm-hmm. of being willing to be part of it that is so fruitful for us. So that's a very nice one. The phone.
I just wanted to add to that constancy and willingness comment in that it really requires a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to have the agreement to put in the effort of attention to be there on the spot anytime. And so if you are, really working in a group with that level of constancy, you're putting in that level of attention.
That's a great word. I like that word better than persistence or constancy. Is a much more active word.
I have a small example of that, if it's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
So many, many years ago, we were building this property. And one of the main builders at the time was Bill DeGroot. And he relayed a story to me when we were all living together in Meadow Vista, about how he had to go into town sometimes to pick up supplies and, take care of little errands. And he would keep his eyes open because he noticed that there would be other community members he would see in town. And that was not just a reminder to him, but also sometimes a message like, hey, it's before cell phones, guys, okay? And there wasn't a phone yet here because we were not yet built here. You need to check in. And he would say that to me every once in a while. He would say, you need to check in. And I just remember that. He told the story about seeing somebody and realizing that he needed to call Morgan and check in. And yes, she had gotten a donation of something for us to carry on with the next building part that we were doing.
To check in.
Hello. That was mostly just been you.
I guess it was me.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's constancy, that's willingness, that's attention, and it's also there's a little bit more to it. It's a quality of alert or something. I'm not sure what you name that.
Well, you know, it's the thing I've been toying with. I might have put it in the email. I'm not 100% sure at the moment. But it's this idea that when you come to this group, when I meet with you, Pat, it's like my A game is on.
Mm.
It's not like just a, I don't come to kill time.
Right.
It's like I must be at that other level.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like another, it's like the atmosphere of the group creates a mirror of operations or excellence. And I think we're going to get into that maybe a little bit more next week, maybe a little bit, this idea of initiation, which is very complex. But right now, it's like, when we come together, it's like, it's serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
These are serious operatives here, very experienced individuals.
And if I could just add one more thing. I note that when we all know who's present in the room, either because Dan named them or because we have said who's here, it makes a difference in the quality of my awareness of them in specific. So I would like us to have that as another one of our protocols, that we actually name the folks who have logged in with us, so that we all sort of have that.
You want to do that, Dan?
Being up on it.
Here are the people who have typed into the chat so far. Silverdale, Eric Brummel, Vedera, Muscle Spark, DePaltz, Puka Puka, Kanjo, and me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that makes it more vibrant, doesn't it? It's like people that, like I know, did you say Eric?
Yeah,
we were talking about him at dinner.
Yeah, your name came up quite a lot.
Your name came up in terms of your. I don't know if you're still doing it, but it seemed like your selling efforts, your craft fairs and things like that, and how important an element of it as a work project that is. All of us have done that, you know, and it's quite something. And you know, I'm always just delighted to hear Vedera's name come up and the quality of work she's doing up in her region. So anyway, that's a really good point. I like that idea. It's just, and we should do like a roll call. And who's here in the room, Pat? Would you tell us?
Well, we have our wonderful scribe, Marvette, is with us. And Paula, our incredible translator, and also reminder.
You know, our witness.
Our witness, exactly.
Witness.
And just in case she doesn't show up in front of the camera today, she is wearing all the colors of all seven domains. We do have our log scribe, and that would be Lost Horizon. And then you see these three characters here. We are really not. This is an illusion.
Particularly in this, for this particular evening, particularly me.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't able to make it. So I've sent my clone.
It's a bot.
My clone.
It's a bot.
Here.
Yeah.
I'm at home.
Two new people sign on, Sean Sun and Art of NGF.
Sean Sun? Sean.
Sean. Thank you.
And then Art came on.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's very good. Wow, what a great start. I was hoping it would take up 55 minutes or so.
I know.
It didn't.
You have a little bit more time left.
Okay, well, then we're going to start.
You know what?
Yes.
We didn't name the two folks that are on the telephone with us.
Yeah. Yep. Well, go ahead. Is anybody on the phone?
Silverdale here. And Joe here.
Hey. So they come alive as actual voices as well. they exist. Anyway, so we're going to continue through this material here. This is quite a book. It's there's 103 chapters. Okay, we're on chapter 24 though. So
don't give me any more numbers.
We're making great progress here, and I don't think we've done well. I guess Invocation of Presence was less than 1 year. Right, Margaret? 40 weeks or something like that? Yeah. Every other one book that we've done has been more than a year.
Well, and that's the honorable thing to do.
We're slow readers.
Well, there is this historical cultural context to that. If you are a guest for more than a year and a day, you may be asked to participate as not a guest anymore. Remember that came with Claire. She had been here for a year and a day, and someone approached her about maybe doing some of the cleaning in the house.
Remind me about Blair.
Oh, and about him.
And Anna Gold. After class, though.
After class, okay.
Try to help me remember that.
All right.
You help me remember.
The courtesy level is primary. The hospitality is first. Courtesy and hospitality are always the first interactions of any member of the school with anyone else. And then the honor is to be asked if you would like to work. To be given a task, and that's always very special. I think that's an important moment.
I've decided to. I am going to bring in Anna Gold's name.
Oh gosh.
Okay. I'm going to tell my story of Anna Gold, which is such a very, very, very narrow part of the picture. But when I first got here, other than mowing lawns, I was given the task. Which I really like, by the way. It could be my second career. But anyway, I was given the task. Blair was a member of the community, and he had contracted cancer. He was cancerous, quite. And right about the time I got here, he had made the decision not to take chemo or radiation anymore because it screwed with his quality of life. So we decided to set up a 24-hour vigil, and Robert and I were managing that vigil. And all that meant was that we would drive people there to where he was in his bedroom section, or cover if that was needed. And this is when I told the story about Adelheid before, and her work in mm-hmm. that space is very good. But anyway, Blair died. Mm-hmm. Now, it is apparently illegal to transport a corpse.
That's correct.
And so I think it was Cooper Weaver at the time came to that location, picked up the body and took it to their mortuary, and we had asked for special treatment, and they agreed. Mm-hmm. This is a small town. They didn't regulate that regulation. And what we had wanted to do, and it happened in other spaces too, what we wanted to do was create a men's space to wash the body, clothe the body, and put the body into a handmade, by Dick, casket mm-hmm. in that space. So Dick was there, Robert was there, I was there, and then Tim mm-hmm. came to do the reading, and pretty much was a constant cycle of the clear light. Mm-hmm. I did most of the washing of the body. And there's no way I could have done it by myself, but you have these two big guys moving the physical body mm-hmm. to help do that. And then clothing and yeah. putting the shroud on that Lily had made was the next challenge. So as we went, began to go into the space, Anna Gold shows up.
Who had been Blair's partner.
They had been together. Prior to that, they were no longer legally married or whatever, but they were friends. She wanted to come in. I was torn, and I said, well, you know, this is a men's space, and I'm not sure if that makes sense. And I said, but here's what I'm going to do. And I made the decision. The room was a bit of a rectangle, so it was a little bit long. And one end, I'm going to call it the front, which was near the front, the door, was the washing table, the cask, everything else that we had. And I said, what I'd like you to do, Anna, is stand at the very far end, but I would prefer that you have no response to this. You have no reaction. You don't get sad. You don't get happy. That your state is absolutely neutral but present. She did a great job. She did a wonderful job. She didn't say anything, but when she walked out, she was quite moved by the ceremony of us doing the job that we had done with this friend of ours. The reason her name came up today, 30 years later, I don't know how this part worked, but she has been married to Jeff Gold.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Gold is one of the preeminent architects in our little county here. He was the architect for Briar Patch, for instance, and mm-hmm. some of the other important ecologically sound buildings. Today, I heard that she is suffering from cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wanted to bring her name into mm-hmm. this space and thank her, in a sense, for the great work that she did in that little, she memorialized part of that space for me so that it's always there.
Mm.
I have no idea how to connect with her, but I just thought, I'll give it to the ladies in the morning about the end of
mm-hmm.
to the reading space, Anna Gold. I don't know if she's passed or not, but apparently she's in a difficult situation. Did you know her? No, you didn't know her.
Not really.
You knew her a little bit, right?
A lot.
She knew, Pat knew her quite a bit.
Anna Gold and Blair were the reason that we moved from Southern California, that the Institute moved from Crestline to Grass Valley.
To this area.
To this place. It was because of the two of them made us welcome and arranged for it to work for us, which is a huge deal. Anna Gold was a protege of Pablo Casals, who in the last century was a preeminent cellist. She was a child prodigy cellist and performed all over the world. Her daughter and my daughters were close friends.
Oh.
She arranged the quartet to play for me when I sang the Bacchianos Brasileiros number 6.
Oh, that was good.
On my 40th birthday.
Yeah.
And Anna had an ongoing relationship with a lot of the mothers in the community because she and Janet Slemko started a... She and Janet Slemko started an early daycare center before there were any around, and it later became one of the Waldorf schools.
Oh.
So there's a lot of history in addition to the...
So she's very foundational in this
community
and for us. And
On and on through the years.
Well, I'll try to connect with... I don't know Jeff. In passing, I think we recognize each other.
Oh, that would be good.
But I might reach out to him and ask him.
Okay.
Tell him that we'd be interested in, and maybe the two of us could go visit.
That would be fine.
Would you be open to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
that would be very good.
Fascinating. The timing is just remarkable, huh? Too slowly.
Very, very kind.
I would do it over there again. Good. Yeah, Anna Gold.
Anna Gold.
Talk.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Anna, A-N-N-A, Gold, G-O-L-D. Long-time community member, great friend of the Institute.
Elemental,
yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Wow.
How about that? How do you like them apples?
Well, is that the answer to question chapter 24, why groups are formed?
Apparently. So we're going to jump over to page 57, chapter 24, why groups are formed. It's a very interesting little chapter. If you had a chance to read it or not, we're going to go ahead and read it because there are all these chapters,
yeah.
Except for 20, are pretty darn short.
Yeah.
And did you want to take that on?
I'd love to take it on.
Okay.
Chapter 24, why groups are formed. E. You asked P the other night if there was an end to the work. The question is there any way this group could bring about the alleviation of suffering of the Absolute? G. Group efforts of candidates for work cannot alleviate suffering of absolute. Groups are only for preparation of individuals as candidates for work. A man of the work can take on obligation to form groups for a short period of time, prepare a few people for work, and then dissolve the group. A group is not meant to be carried on endlessly. Once a few individuals are found who can be prepared, the group is no longer necessary. I do not offer anything personal, only the possibility of becoming candidate for work, and I cannot tell beforehand whether you will be successful or not. Nothing is guaranteed. Do not misunderstand the group. Group work is simply to bring together candidates for initiation. If it is possible to learn to work, then continue. If not, then you are sent away. No sense wasting your time.
So, let's unpack that a little bit.
I wish Robert were sitting with us because he has multiple instances of this. I could name them for him.
Go ahead then.
Bunraku, tree planting. Creation story verbatim, the play. Frame studio. Can you do when you use the count?
Sure.
ceramics, all of those, quote, projects assembled a number of people to produce the project, some of whom were novices. They were new, came here apparently for a specific thing. And in that specific thing that was assembled, either for them or not, but that's what it looked like to me, there was a assignment, but underneath the assignment, you know, get your work done, underneath that assignment was this group work drive thrust, you know, bang around thing going on. And
let's describe. First of all, Robert was an individual that came to this particular school very young. He was a very, very young man. Had no training, I don't think, in anything. He was just...
He had a little art training.
A little bit of art
yeah,
training.
Yeah, he had a little art training.
So he came... So what is Bunraku? Bunraku is a type of puppeteer work that kind of grows out of Japan. And the way it operates is that the puppeteers are... They operate a puppet that's about this big.
And three work together.
And it's a very small little puppet on stage. That's how the Japanese do it. And then it's a play. It's like a specific play that goes on. EJ, as is usual, took it to a whole other level. His puppet was life-size.
Mm-hmm.
And the puppeteers, the main puppeteer really was Robert. It was Robert, Rashid, mm-hmm. Kelly, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Parker was the storyteller.
And Rose.
Was Rose part of that?
Yes.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yes, Rose came in through the Bunraku puppetry.
And they were dressed in all black. Parker, who was a phenomenal guitar player, just the simplicity of his presentation, would then tell the story
mm-hmm.
of the particular puppet. I think there were two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And after a very short period of time, the puppeteers would disappear.
Yes, and all you saw
was the colored puppet.
The puppets.
Floating, talking, walking. It was quite
dancing.
Beautiful. Dancing, which required them to work together with great intimacy
Yeah. Because
their movements had to be coordinated to the music and to the story. So that was a small group that came together for that purpose, and it lasted a while.
Oh, yeah, a good 2 or 3 years, I think.
And then it came apart. It was no longer happening.
Yeah.
Robert began, among other things, started the play
mm-hmm.
with Kelly and became quite an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Really wonderful ability to act. And they would put on the play, and I think many of us have seen it, so vibrant in the way he did it. He became really a first-class actor.
Absolutely.
At that point.
And that's a skill that you acquired. Go ahead.
That, the play, you mean Creation Story Verbatim?
Creation Story
yes,
Verbatim. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yes.
So they did that, and they... I happened to be...
Go ahead, say it. Go ahead.
I happened to be living with Kelly at the time, and Robert would come over daily, and there'd be hours of practice, rehearsal, and that they would go through. I mean, you know, my brain, I don't know that I could ever be an actor, and I don't know if I could remember the lines. And these guys did the whole thing and the gesture and all of this. It's quite beautiful. And when they did it in that space, it was very clear that particular invocation occurred. And the play lasted for a number of years.
Absolutely. I think it might have been 5 to 10, all told.
And then it stopped being
mm-hmm.
an actor. Robert and then EJ decided that we needed to become, in the museum, auctioneers for fine art. So Robert then became an expert at conservatory framing on a pretty big scale.
Yep, art conservation, quality framing, matting and framing.
And
just beautiful.
You know, and on and on and on. And you see him, I remember when he was first learning to play, you've seen him as a musician now, as a harmonica player. I remember when he was first learning it. He just liked it. I'd meet him in town in the coffee house, and he'd be studying, you know, music and how it works and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes like, he has the ability to become an expert in his field, whatever it has. It's just remarkable talent that he has. So that's like an example of a group forming. Groups forming for particular purposes. But it's curious what EJ says next in the next couple of paragraphs. He says, basically, and he clarifies it in the last fourth paragraph there, he says, this is not for personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, he says, I do not offer anything personal. There's nothing personal about this form of work. If it happens to be such that something in your personality changes, so be it. But that is not the purpose. And when I first got here, the term was going along, how can you put yourself in a position such that your transformation is a
necessity
for the work? So it's not like, how do we make you feel better today? Or what can we do so that you can make more money? Or what can we do so that you can be more successful? That wasn't it. There were these tasks of objectivity that had nothing to do with any individual. And those individuals then would, like you fill yourself against a wall of perfection in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I move this Bunraku puppet in a certain way?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, how do I move my body so that it can do what is needed?
Right.
So the task isn't how to make you feel better. And that is, we can find that out. Okay. We don't have to seek ways beyond our psychosis, our personal psychology.
No, that's not required.
It's, who cares? As long as it doesn't get in the way. It's not supposed to get in the way. But the point is, do the job. And like one of the great rules of the kitchen is, don't bring your stuff into the mashed potatoes. Okay? You know. There's a purity in that. So it's the group work that we form as a group, like that, when those individuals came together, the Bunraku or Kelly and Robert in the play, they started at this level. They started at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are doing here as well. We're, as Silverdale and I spoke briefly last night, some of the stuff we talk about, I doubt anybody on the planet's talking about this level of esotericism with this subtlety because of the material we have to work with.
Well, the other thing is there is an agreement of an operating base that we bring here every Wednesday night, which says, I'm interested to the extent and more than that my contribution of attention will help the participation of all of us to investigate.
Yeah.
I think that's the word we're at right now. We're investigating, what is this material? What is this that we're looking at here? It's not a code. It is not unknown to us. It is just maybe kind of, we're out of context with it a little bit. We need to be realigned somehow so we are in comprehension.
Dan, how many people are on now? Are there more names?
Mm-hmm.
Alchemisha just signed in.
Oh my goodness.
Great to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah.
And we have a new person in that.
In the physical space here too. Welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
We're welcoming people individually this time.
And I also used to get here, I used to use this term, like, he's the fool that does something. Do you remember you used to, like, the Sufi concept of the fool? You would use that phraseology. You're the one that put it in my brain. But, you know, he's the fool that does the building, or he's the guy, you know, that you're the fool that does the cooking.
Well, there is one of the, I think it's one of these short talks we skipped here about the aristocrats and slaves, which is to say that, you know, of those hundreds or possibly thousands of individuals that, you know, who EJ has looked at, let's say, or interacted with, or offered training to, and so on and so on. None of the aristocrats are here. You know, none of the aristocrats are in our group, I don't think. You know, it's because they're not. It's the people who've become, you know, had a chance to become initiated, whether they did or not. People who've had constancy, is that the word you use? People who've lasted, you know, who've stayed around. EJ's work are janitors, you know, the people who are doing, you know, house cleaners. And like you said for, was it Claire? You have to be willing to, I'll never forget that it was one of these workshops, I think it was in New York, where EJ, he was working with theater, you know, with Robert and I think Mark Olson, and there were some people from theater there, and there was a guy, and you know, there was a guy who was a producer or a filmmaker or something, and he invited him. He told him, "Well, why don't you come out to California and work with me? We can do theater and we can do this or that." And the guy said, "Well, I'm doing theater. I'm in New York here. I have to produce my movies. I'm doing I have to be around the theater and so on. What could I do in California?" And EJ said, "Well, what does it matter? You can dig ditches. Well, you know, why don't you come out and we're working on a property and you can dig ditches and, you know, I'll give you a shovel." And the guy said, "No, thanks." You know, and that was basically, that was a sort of a very dramatic presentation of what EJ was offering, which is to say, how about if you give up your aristocratic, somewhat mechanical life, which you think is so wonderful and artistic and so on, and I'll put you to work. That was what he was offering.
What I wanted to say about that was that the three people that are right here were the fools that are sitting in front right now. That's all. That's the only difference.
I want to say, speaking of stories, I want to say something else about this, and at the risk of being repetitive, because I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but this was, I think that when the period of my most accelerated, I think, understanding or learning or whatever, comprehension around EJ, had to do with that Wood Shillow training. And what I saw there is that there were individuals, this was back in 73, 74, down in Los Angeles, in Southern California, and EJ set up these Wood Shillow centers, and he had this really powerful thing going on where I think it's a, he was offering out of storefronts, basically on the street, he was offering something straight from a school, an esoteric school, which is very unusual. Occurrence, I think, at any time in the culture. But so here he's offering this training, and people, very few strangers, you know, would just come in and grok it at all, you know, off the street. But there were groups. Groups came from New York, and groups came from Vancouver, and I think from Chicago, Colorado, yeah. And so these groups, I was participating in this training, but I did much more I was working as a trainer much more than a trainee, but what I remember is there were certain individuals, because EJ set it up this way, well, you know, if you wanted to come for the whole summer for 2.5 months or something like that, you could pay, you know, $3,500 or $4,200 or something like that, and you could just go through all the training. You know, you could pay for your training, and you would get the training, and you would go through, and it was set up like belts, you know, like jiu-jitsu. So you would start with your white belt and your brown belt and your black belt and your green belt. And there was one guy, came from New Jersey, and he was so enthusiastic, and he said, and this is exactly what he did, is he paid. So the thing was, he never did what we called co-session. He never learned to be a trainer. He never trained anybody else. He got his training, and he got the thing done on him. But, you know, all of us, like maybe 5 or 10 people, gave him training sessions and so on and so on. And you know, in the course of that one summer, actually, I probably, as an instructor, let's say, we call them a mala and a lama. As a mala or an instructor, I must have worked with 100 or 200 people or something like that. And the thing was, and, you know, I think I told this to Fred and Elena, were doing this filming to make their documentary. You know, I got this tremendous understanding of this mechanicality of a number of issues about the Enneagram types and personality types and mechanical behavior and the buffers that people have and how sleep, you know, how people keep in sleep, how they come out of sleep and go back into sleep very readily and so on and so forth. And so what I came to see after, it was a very compressed period. It was only 3 or 4 or 5 months at the most. I mean, this is by what EJ called the way of service. You see, by obligating yourself, by becoming the service person, basically the janitor, you know, doing the cleanup, doing whatever needed to be done, offering the training to other people, and giving the procedures and whatever they needed to get to finish all this training that they paid for. It's like, you know, those people were not very, they got something out of it personally, and then they were part of, I would say they were part of an experiment or that EJ was doing, but they were not the candidates. You know, none of them, hundreds and hundreds of people, none of them turned out to be initiates or candidates or anything else, but they were, you know, those of us who were doing the janitorial work and the service of running these centers was like the actors doing sacred theater with creation story verbatim, or like a whole troupe going on the road and giving Bunraku performances that were magical. I mean, that really energized a fairly large audiences. I mean, they reached a lot of people with that Bunraku. So I'm just thinking all of those were school projects. You know, of one sort or another.
But we would go out and sell jewelry. I did a lot of jewelry and art sales, a lot of it. And you'd set up, and like Eric, and whenever you're working with the public, like Videra is, Eric is, you just are at service to the space. We would see, I don't know, a couple hundred people.
Mm-hmm.
In a weekend when we set up at a craft fair or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you just had to be ready, because 1 in 50 are going to go, something's different here.
Mm-hmm. What are you guys doing?
And you had to be ready for them and be able to recognize them, whereas the next person, you know, is just an average person, another look-a-loo, you know. And like, you're sitting, I was in this thing in Denver, big long room, it was a small, wasn't a big thing. I'm sitting there, and a guy, I was far from the door as you could get, our booth. The guy opens the door, he comes in, he looks at me, he points, and he bought the necklace off my neck.
Off your neck, yeah. Remember that.
He says, I have to have that. He never asked how much it was. You know, I happen to remember, $450. And he just peeled the cash off.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Marvette is telling us that it was in the 80s when $450
yeah.
was something.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was, and it shocked me to be able to realize I have no idea what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
in that event.
Mm-hmm.
So we stand ready.
Mm-hmm. You honor the space, you respect the space, and you make a gateway. Remember, EJ gave this instruction
yeah.
to the trophy shop when it was first starting. You make a gateway so that during the time of a transaction, there is an opportunity for being to be present and acknowledged. And that was the whole deal with the truffle. This is an offering. Here's the cash. That's the transaction. Oh, look. There's a being present. Ooh.
They might see that, and you'd have
yes.
to be able to respond. At the same time, you had to be very perfect at your ability to be a shop person. You know, and I used to work on the truffle shop. And that was the work we did with people would just come in, and sometimes they'd recognize something, you know, sometimes.
Well, this book, this particular volume, technically, is written from events that took place before
mm-hmm.
what any of us are describing,
right.
Well, actually after what Ivan is talking about, before Truffle Shop. But the point of it is the same. Work of groups, especially what's being talked about in 21, 22, and 23 up through 26, I think it is these little tiny nuggets of a piece of this, which as David said earlier, Russ, when you said, how do we unpack this?
Yeah.
My immediate response was, well, I don't think we want to do that, do we? But now I'm seeing what's being applied here is what we've done in the past, which is
mm-hmm.
our persistent attention to the detail of the communication. That's what we're offered in this text. There's detail of communication that is so precise that you can actually get hold of something like Ivan's describing. The message of the teaching was not to get your ribbon, belt, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
but you know, to check and see are you an interested candidate or not.
Yeah. So let me just point to this on page 57. What I noticed was this line where G is saying in the fourth paragraph, I do not offer anything personal, only the possibility of becoming candidate for work. And you know, that's actually that's the tagline. I mean, that's the overview of the story that I'm telling about, which is to say that if you just pitch in, you say, well, what is the job that needs to be done? And what is, you know, what is going on in this training center? What help do people need? Or what are we offering? What are we providing? What's the job that's open? And then basically this thing, that, you know, again, like I said, I learned in a very accelerated 3 or 4 months, you know, this principle that the job makes the man, you know, that you, in other words, with the
yeah.
obligation, by taking on obligation, you know, I had no, well, let's say, I wouldn't say I had no training, but
exactly.
I had no expectation, let's say, of being a competent trainer or instructor, yeah, or for anything. And I experienced this in other venues where EJ sticks you into one of these projects. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But you know, I was stuck into a few of them where, you know, basically it was sink or swim. So you would find that the issue was that there was an essence perspective. You know, there was a way of approaching it as an essence task,
mm-hmm.
and what I'm saying is that you, if you want to go to the essence point of view, to go to the essence position, you it's always the way of service. It's always where you're giving and not taking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what, at least in those venues, it was.
Yeah.
I think it's true in the sales. It's true in the sales. It's true in the bazaar, you know, in the public bazaar. It's true in the, you know, with the essential oils, with jewelry, as you're saying.
So, yeah. Jewelry, essential, I saw all of that stuff. If you have a chance to put yourself, I think Alka, I think, was going to, I think she might have done some selling.
Mm-hmm.
She made some jewelry, and Eric did. And, you know, if I have a chance, which I never seem to find, but if I was ever driving across Prescott, Arizona, I'll go do a show with you, Eric. I'll do,
mm-hmm.
We'll sell together, okay? That's a kick. It's a lot of fun. So if you can get yourself into a position like that, it's really interesting because you are the host of the person coming to the booth. Your job is just to host them, and if all they want is to purchase something, to do it with excellence,
mm-hmm.
explain the data of the element they're buying, do the transaction right, charge the card or whatever it is, do it with great excellence, and 1 in 50 or 100 or something is going to see something. And so you have to be ready for that as well. Both of those things occur. So try to put yourself in a position where you have to do something like that for others. I don't know if Tom is still doing his music show. He was going to do music for
mm-hmm.
Retirement homes, I think. That's the kind of thing. Like, all you can do is just put yourself there with as good as you can, and somebody might come up to you. Okay? Things like that. What do you say, Dan?
Hey, Dan. Any comments or questions on the catalog?
Eric Brummel says, I'll remember that, David.
Good.
And Muscle Spark acknowledged the request to add Anna to the reading list.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Before you close this out,
the last sentence says, no sense wasting your time. And I take that as a very respectful acknowledgement that there is no reason to be wasting your time if this is not what you wish to do. And if it is what you wish to do, also do not waste your time. It's the quality of urgency, because the sentence before that says, if it is possible to learn to work, then continue. If not, then you are sent away. No sense wasting your time. So that is a quality of paying attention to the time element. Like, we don't have a lot of time. And this is the first place I've noticed this particular instruction.
Mm.
No sense wasting your time. And obviously that would go him too. No sense in wasting his time. That's why he's going to send you away if you're not a match.
We, as you get to become more of an old guy like me, you actually do start to sense your mortality, and that you in fact have moments left. And you look back and you say, I've only had moments. And we have more of a signature to give. And at that point, you start to focus on it. And once again, if you want to see an exercise that'll just knock your socks off, chapter 24, Practical Work on Self, The Last Hour of Life. Read through it, and then read through it. It's a worthy thing to do. Okay?
And remember, there is a workshop this weekend, which would be well worth your time to spend some of it there if you're able to participate in that workshop.
And next Wednesday, we'll take it up again at 7 o'clock, Chapter 25 on questions.
Did you have something, Dan?
Eric Brummel is asking if there are still books available and what the price is for worker groups.
Yeah, I think there are. Ivan.
Yeah, this spiral copy is $35 plus shipping, so it's about, I guess, to be $45 without California tax.
Right, at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Remember that. Thank you for coming. We'll look forward to seeing you next week at 7. Good night.
Good night, all.